in that paper, which I will not talk much, is which will appear, is a generalization of this model stabilization using also three-form fluxes. So the outline of the talk is the following. I will discuss briefly the motivations, then describe the framework, which will be type 1 string theory with magnetized benign brains. And then I will present a particular example, which is a simple one, just toroidal T6 with magnetized benign brains, and show that in this example one can use with appropriate magnetic fields, which have to be also of oblique type, in other words, in all possible directions on T6. You can you can find a vacuum which is n equal 1 supersymmetric, so we'll escape supersymmetric conditions, satisfies the Tarpor cancellation without addition of other type of brains, and all 36 moduli of T6 are stabilized. And then this is actually, I decided not to talk about this, but I will instead, if I had time, I will discuss about the split supersymmetry, I mean the application for possible realization in this context, models with split supersymmetry. So the cosine motivation, one had several results recently about moduli stabilization with three-form fluxes, basically, starting from type 2b, in which there has been made significant progress. However, the main problems that remain is the first is that there is no exact string description, so one has to use the low energy super gravity approximation. Second, this at least in this simple first approach, one can fix only the complex structure and the dilaton, but not the Keeler class model. Actually, what I will present is by turning on also internal magnetic fluxes, one can use it either as an alternative or as a complementary approach to that one, which has an advantage that it provides an exact string description. Therefore, one can do much more precise analysis of the spectrum, of computation of amplitudes, and so on. And also, that it provides a method to, at least in this context, to stabilize the Keeler class. And finally, it has a natural implementation in models of intersecting brains. So briefly about the general framework. So the idea is that you start with type 1 string theory compactified on, in general on a six-dimensional Calabi-Yau, which leaves the closed string sector 2 supersymmetries and n equal 1 on the brains. And then in this context, you can turn on magnetic fluxes on any two cycle of the manifold. Now, by in general, these magnetic fluxes break supersymmetry, but there are particular combinations that preserve them, and this can allow to stabilize the model. Now, what has a Dirac quantization, which is satisfied by magnetic field. A is the area of the cycle, and M over N are two quantized numbers, could be integers, or depending the quantization depends on the commutification manifold. M is the unit of the flux, and then is the wrapping number of the brain around the cycle. By turning on a magnetic field, the components of the momentum are along the two dimensions of the cycle do not commute. They're given by the charge times the magnetic field, and therefore one has a Landau spectrum, and in principle, in general, supersymmetry is broken. Since The last talk in Emilian's, he had already described some of the parts, so I'll go very, very briefly just to say the main idea. So by turning on a magnetic field on a two-cycle, for instance, on a torus, then from the field theory point of view, you have a contribution, you have a mass shift, which is given for the charged states, which is given by two contributions. One contribution is has to do comes from the Landau levels, and the other contributions come from the coupling of the spin to the magnetic field. So this spectrum in general breaks supersymmetry. Scalars become massive. Fermions have zero mode, have one chiral zero mode, which depends on the sign. It's one of the two spins, the projection spins. And the spin one has a tachyon. It leads to a tachyon, which is related to the all the Nielsen-Sanders instability. Now this picture and can be generalized in the case, for instance, of three tori. The main difference is that concerning this, the chiral spinor, there is always one chiral spinor out of the four that you start in 10 dimensions. And the nice thing is that concerning the tachyon instability, this can be avoided because in addition to the negative contribution, depending on which direction you take the projection of the spin, you have two positive contributions which come from the other two directions and which behave like scalar, and therefore all of them can be chosen to be positive. If one of them is zero, then you have partial supersymmetry restoration. And this, actually, these conditions, which are field theory conditions, can be generalized in string theory, where you replace the magnetic field by the angle, which describes the the change of the frequencies, which also Emilian described. So I'm coming to the particular example. I will describe the the toroidal example, which has 36 moduli, which can are described by the components of the internal metric, 21 components, and 15 components of the Ramon-Ramon 2 form. And these are complexified to 9 Keller class and 9 complex fraction. So you have 9 complex moduli each. And furthermore, the magnetic flux is in general a 6x6 antisymmetric matrix, which can be complexified in a particular basis, that complex basis on the torus. And therefore, one can has two types of fluxes. Fluxes in two cycles, which are holomorphic two cycles, and the fluxes on one-one cycles, which are of mixed type. It turns out that the fluxes on the holomorphic two cycles provide the potential for the complex fracture, tau, of the torus, while the fluxes along the 1-1 cycles provide the potential for the Keller class. Now, the supersymmetry conditions can be studied in general. They have been studied in the past, and they are summarized in these two conditions. The fluxes along the holomorphic two cycles must vanish. So this will give conditions for the complex fracture. So what I'm looking is for supersymmetric conditions. And the second, that the fluxes along the 1-1 cycle satisfy this equation, which is the supersymmetry which is preserved. It's compatible with the existence of orientiful 9 planes. In the case that you want to preserve, instead of 9 planes, 3 planes, then this condition changes. This is a nonlinear condition for the Keller class and allows to fix the Keller class. So by appropriate choice of magnetic fluxes, in principle, one can combine these two conditions and see whether there are solutions that preserve supersymmetry and satisfy all consistency conditions of the theory. Just as an example, if you take, for instance, the torus to be product of three tori, then the complex structure essentially every tori is characterized by two radii, let's say orthogonal two tori, R and R prime, capital I is 1, 2, 3. So the complex structure is I times actually the ratio of the two, and the Keller class is the product. The magnetic field is F divided by the area. So the first condition is fixes taus, the ratios of the radii, and the second condition fixes the area. And in the case of diagonal tori, you have this equation, which is equivalent to the equation that the sum of the angles is zero, and which is non-linear to. Now, if one looks in the DBI axiom, the DBI axiom in this the internal part is written as a square root of two perfect squares, this term and this term. So the supersymmetry condition, which is compatible with the existence of all nine planes, is a condition that puts the second term equal to zero. And therefore, the DBI action becomes a polynomial, which is this one, for diagonal fields. While similarly, if one could choose, if one wanted to choose a supersymmetry condition which preserves all three planes, then this term would vanish instead, and the DBI axiom would be given by the second. Now, by the form of the axiom, one sees that there are two terms that one generates. The first one is the ordinary nine-brain term. And the second is the induced five-brain. And therefore, there are two types of Tadpole conditions. Tadpole conditions that imposes that the charge of the nine-brain charge should be equal to the charge of the orientable planes, 16. While the five-brain Tadpole conditions guarantee that the charge for every two cycle so the five-brain charge associated to this two cycle should be zero. And this is a condition between, so just to remind you that here N are the Lapin numbers of the brain and the M are the magnetic fluxes. This case are signs, plus or minus one, which depend on the orientation choice of the basis in which parameterize your site. So these are two consistency conditions, and furthermore, there are positivity requirements. The first positivity requirement comes from the volume the volume term must be positive. So this is a local condition, and moreover, the absence of anti-brains imposes this relation. This, in principle, can be relaxed. I mean, there are examples. That can avoid this condition, but just to be safe, in what follows, I will impose it. So using this analysis, I'll just summarize here the main ingredients for model stabilization. The first is that you need the oblique magnetic fields in order to fix the off-diagonal components of the metric. In other words, if you put several magnetic fields together, they don't give rise to boundary conditions which do not commute, so it's like non-abelian orbitals. The second is that a magnetized benign brain gives rise to a negative five-brain tension. This was also a point that was stressed in the last talk, and you can see it from the form of the DBI action after you take the square root. One of these terms comes with minus sign. And finally, one has to use the nonlinear form of the action of the, in other words, the alpha prime corrections in order to fix all the moduli, in particular the overall volume. Actually, the first two ingredients are important and necessary for cancellation of the five brain charges, while the last two can be realized only for six internal dimensions. In other words, if you go to four dimensions, and they are not valid if you go to six dimensions, because then in six dimensions the condition for supersymmetry becomes linear and does not fix the overall volume. And moreover, you cannot play the same game without addition of five planes to have to satisfy all tuples. What about Ramon-Ramon moduli? I mean, since it is the vacuum is supersymmetric, they have to be fixed by the same way. The way that they are fixed, though, is the following. Concerning the Keller class, Ramon-Ramon moduli are those that complexify the definition of the Keller class, and they are absorbed by the U1s of the magnetized U1s of the brains to give masses to these U1s. In other words, there is a Green Schwarz type coupling coming from the Sensheimer coupling of this form from higher dimensions, where when F is constant magnetic field, then you C2 is the Ramon-Ramon 2 form, where you take the internal components. You find the Green Schwarz terms which give mass to the magnetized ones. So this implies, in particular, that the minimum example, that the minimal example that you can do in order to stabilize all Keller class moduli require the existence of nine brain stacks, different stacks, nine brains. Concerning complex structure, they get potential through the mixing of NS with Nevers Schwarz moduli, and this was explicitly shown in a recent paper by Bianchi and Trevino. So I want to present you briefly the example. So the idea is first that that one uses six stacks of brains that are allowed to fix all off diagonal components of the metric equal to zero, at the same time fix all the diagonal components except three, which are the area of the three tori, diagonal tori. So concerning the complex structure, the choice of the fluxes, which are oblique, impose that the off-diagonal components of the complex structure are zero, and the ratios are determined by the diagonal elements are determined by the ratios of fluxes, and at the same time, all the off-diagonal components of the Keller class is put to zero. So you are left over with the areas of the three tori, and in order to fix those, you need to add the three more stacks. I remind that nine were the minimum. By the way, one other important point is that the induced five brain tadpoles, which are written here, are the fluxes are chosen in a way that the induced five brain tadpoles are localized only along the three diagonal tori. Next, you choose three more stacks in general, so they satisfy this matrix equation. One can easily find consistent solutions which cancel the tadpoles and stabilize also this the three areas of the tori. Now, an important observation is that once you have a solution, which you can write down an explicit solution, then one find, well, can easily find an infinite number of discrete solutions by doing the following rescaling. You can rescale, for instance, the flux along the first torus of simultaneous of all the three brains, and at the same time you see that by lambda the Keller class, so the area of the first torus is also rescaled by lambda in a way that the magnetic field, the physical magnetic field, which is the ratio of the flux divided by the area, is fixed. So in other words, there is once you have a solution, you find an infinite number of discrete solutions in which the area is rescaled up to indefinitely large values. So this is this more or less the example. As I said, I mean, one possible application. I mean, there are two possible things that one can further do. The first is to generalize this to not to torus, but to more general manifolds, Calabi-Yau manifolds or orbifolds. The problem generalizing this to Calabi-Yau manifolds is that a Calabi-Yau manifold doesn't have holomorphic two cycles. So strictly speaking, this method, if you apply it as it is, can stabilize only the Keller class moduli, which are precisely the moduli that are not stabilized from the three front fluxes. So in principle, and the dilaton, of course. So in principle, you can combine the two methods for a Calabi-Yau in order to fix the moduli. However, there is in general, you can turn on fluxes. You can generalize this method by turning on fluxes also to kinetic terms of the hypermultiples, if you want, in the internal directions. And this allow to stabilize also part of the complex structure. I don't know if you can stabilize everything, but. Sorry? Yeah. If it is bigger than? Yes. So the tension of the brains, I'm not sure what you mean. The tension of the D9 brain is the same, but the induced tension, if you want, with the magnetic field, the total tension is positive, and it is in general is less than the here is the condition. I mean, this is the tension of the induced tension of the magnetized D9 brain, and we impose a positivity condition. So some of them is bigger, some of them is smaller. Well, it depends if the magnetic flux is positive or negative. Yeah, if I remember correctly, yes. I have to check it, but yeah. You say it has to be bigger, but this is BP. The induced tension. I have to check the sign. Yeah, I'm not sure now what is the sign. But my impression is that there are both sides. But okay, I'm not sure. Yeah, this model is an equivalent supersymmetric. It leaves an equal launch person. And the flux is imply that the metric is diagonal. Yeah, right. Yeah, this is cancer. Yeah, yeah, the nine brain charge. The total nine brain cells, it is 16. And it is the same. It's the same condition for the tension. Because the condition that we impose, the absence of antibrains, which is not necessarily the most general one, implies that all these signs, time the ramping numbers, are positive. No, no, but sorry, this is, I think what you are talking about tension is the sum of the two terms. Okay? Now, this sum of the two terms, I separate it in two parts. The first is this part, which contributes to the ordinary D9 brain charge and tension. That's what I call. And the second part, it can be either positive or negative, but it is an induced 5 brain charge and tension. And the sum is zero without the addition of other 5 brains. No, what I'm saying is that the total tension of the induced 5 brain tension vanishes. So. So what I would like now, perhaps, to say how much time. Yeah. Okay. In the remaining time, I will discuss a bit the realization of split supersymmetry models in this context. Actually, the main observation is that. Okay. Skip this. Motivations about split supersymmetry. The main observation is that the spectrum of the split supersymmetry, namely the fact that you can that you keep the fermions of the minimal supersymmetric standard model light and have all the scalars heavy, it's a spectrum which is resulting from the structure of the breaking of supersymmetry that you obtain from magnetic fields. So in other words, previously I described an equal one supersymmetric solution. Now imagine that you deform a bit that solution so that this n equal one supersymmetry is broken. In general, what you do is that you give masses to all scalars, all charged scalars, while the fermions remain massless. In particular, not only the, of course, the chiral fermions, but also the Gaijinos plus the Higgsinos. So this is in general, the type of spectrum that you want in split supersymmetry. The main question is whether you can implement the unification of Gauge couplings, because this is one of the precisely of the of the motivations that you want to keep by raising the supersymmetry breaking scale. You want to keep the two main prediction supersymmetry, which is the unification of couplings and the dark matter candidate. So one can study the unification of Gauge couplings. So this has two parts. The first is the non-abelian coupling, so in particular the coupling between VSU3 and VSU2. And then the U1 part, which has to do with the particular embedding of the hypercharge. So the first thing is to study the unification of non-abelian coupling. Now, in general, when you have in a brain configuration, that the Gauge couplings are given by this formula, so they are not automatically unified. They depend on the one hand on these rapid numbers, which effectively increase the volume. I mean, they multiply the volume by the total volume by the rapid number, and then by the modification that you have from the Bonnefeld axiom, which depends on the internal magnetic field. So the two conditions to guarantee unification is that first, prefactor, which is the product of these rapid numbers, must be the same for the SU3 and the SU2. And the second is that this modification due to the Bonnefeld action has to be small or the same for the two groups. Now the observation is that the first condition, which is that the rapid number, the requirement that this is one, can come out just from the from the requirement of the spectrum, that you don't want the model to have color sextets or weak triplets. In other words, states which are which transform in the anti-symmetric or symmetric representation. I mean symmetric representation, sorry, of the SU3 and the SU2. The reason is that the multiplicity of the states which transform under symmetric representations are precisely proportional to this factor, and, the absence of those guarantee that the product of the rapid numbers have to be one. So this is a nice property. The second requirement requires some more quantitative analysis. So, for instance, if I require that the quality of the couplings at the unification scale has an error which is 1%, then this implies that what is in the square root has to be 1%, which means that the value of the magnetic field in terms in units of the string scale has to be less than 1/10, roughly. Therefore, every radius, let's say, must be less or about, I mean, it should not be bigger than 3 times the string scale. Now, this condition, it seems to be too strong, though, because if all the radii, all the volumes are about 1%, then the total volume, which is the product of the three areas, is 1,000, which seems to be too high to keep the string weakly coupled. However, this condition can be partly relaxed if for some for some torus, the two magnetic fields are the same for the SU3 and the SU2 group. And this condition, again, it follows from the absence of the of states which are doublet anti-triplets. I mean, I remind you that, again, by the spectrum, the multiplicities of the states, for instance, of quark doublets are given by the first by the first combination, while the anti-quark doublets is given by the second combination, which has a minus sign. So if you impose that this multiplicity is zero, this implies that one of the factors vanishes, and the vanishing of the unknown factor precisely guarantees that the magnetic field vanishes. I mean, it's the same in the two directions, in the two groups. So it seems that the unification can be imposed just by the requirement on the spectrum. And therefore, one has the following more or less distribution of mass scales. So in this context, the GAT scale, which is the unification scale, should be identified with the smallest compactification scale. And this should be 10 to the 16 GV in this context. On the other hand, the string scale can be determined from the requirement that the smallest magnetic field, as I said, from the analysis of the gauge coupling unification, is about 1/10, which means that the string scale should not be much higher, should not be much higher. It's about 3 times the unification scale, the square root of this. And finally, the supersymmetry breaking scale is in principle a free parameter, which corresponds to the combination of the angles or of the magnetic fields which break this one supersymmetry to nothing. So this scale, in principle, you can treat it as an arbitrary parameter. And the second part of the unification has to do with the hypercharge. Now, the hypercharge, of course, is not cannot be imposed in general because it's model dependent. Depends on how it is how the hypercharge is embedded in the various U1s. So what I need to do is to show just an example, that there is at least one example which predicts that the sine square theta has the correct value 3 over 8 at the unification scale. And in order to find such an example, I consider just the simple case in which you have three stacks of brains of with group U3, U2, and U1. And the ambiguity that you have here is that the two antiquarks can be identified either as open strings which are stretched between the U3 and the U1, or as open strings which belong in the anti-symmetric representation of the U3. So depending which one of the UC or the DC you identified as the anti-symmetric representation of U3, you obtain three models. I mean, the first is that the UC is identified with this state, or the DC, or none of them. So these are the three models, I mean, the three possible embeddings of the standard model spectrum in this set of the three brains. So you have either the UC or the DC, or none of them, the one which is identified with anti-symmetric representation. And for every one of them, you can compute the hypercharge as a linear combination of the three U1s. And then once you have the hypercharge, you can compute the sine square theta as a function of the couplings. And then you impose the unification of the non-abelian couplings, U3 and the U2. And you find that for the model A, actually, the sine square theta is 3 over 8. So this is just an existence proof that, of course, this is not the only possibility, but this is one possibility, one simple realization which gives you the correct sine square theta. I think that my time can be over. Yeah, okay. So, thank you. Thanks, Kim. Well, in this approximation, the angle is of the order of the magnetic field because it's small. The angle is small. Right, yeah, the angle that you with respect to a reference point to the oriented.